We just said a tefillah l'shloma medina. It's interesting that Hatikva itself, some have said, has become almost like a tefillah. Raise your hand if at the end of, we don't do this, but at the end of your Pesach Seder, is there anyone here who says Hatikva? Uh-huh, interesting. Okay, has anyone seen after Yom Kippur services that they end with Hatikva? Okay, no, but I have read that there are places where they do this. So, given its origins, which we're going to learn about tonight, it's really quite fascinating that there are some who treat Hatikva as if it is a tefillah. So let's begin by talking about the symbol that is behind the Tikva and Emunah, which is the Israel flag, which of course the blue is taken from the Tehillet and the Jewish star, although it's certainly not the most ancient of Jewish symbols, certainly is now identified as a Jewish symbol. When did the flag become the official symbol of the state of Israel, as if we were one of the tribes marching with our flag? When did the flag, how long after the creation of the state, do you think? Guess?
Before the Zionist Congress.
Zionist Congress, but how about as a state, if you don't mind taking off my jacket? As a state? Within five months. When did the Hatikva become the official national anthem of the state of Israel? The official national anthem of the Jewish state. Guess. 2004. It took a resolution to expand the basic emblem and flag law of Israel in 2004 to make Hatikva the official anthem of the state of Israel. Now, there's a lot of reasons for that. You're going to see here that the words of Hatikva get changed again and again. Part of it is to make it more comfortable for a secular socialist crowd, and as the state develops, the words have to change. Were there pushbacks perhaps from Sephardim, who don't feel that, you know, they're looking Mizrach, maybe they're looking Ma'arav to get to Israel? Were they concerned about an Arab uprising who don't have a Nefesh Yehudi? I don't know all of the reasons, but it didn't happen. And it's interesting that also the amendment was put through right around the time of Yasser Arafat's death. So there are some people who say that everyone was so busy with other stuff, they snuck it through. At any rate, Hatikva v'Haemunah. Anyone want to say what the difference is between hope and faith? Yeah.
You're not talking about
Rav Cook's Ne'emana. I am, but what's the difference between hope and faith?
Hope is for the future, and just hope is for the future.
Okay.
Present future.
Yeah.
Present. And faith is something that is constant.
Okay. Hope is, so you're saying hope is like something that doesn't exist, and if, in the future we hope it'll exist. And faith is something that's a constant that you have, that it will exist. Okay, we're going to explore that a little bit more. All right, a little bit of background. First person to name who is singing wins a prize that Rabbi Eisenberg will choose.
An extra cupcake.
Correct. 1927. Listen to the words.
Oh.
Okay, what are some simple changes that you heard? So some of the last phrases were changed, and we'll look at it. I'll hand you out sheets so you can actually see the changes. Le'ir David Chana, the place where David rested, as opposed to Eretz Tzion Yerushalayim. All right? Eretz Kodshenu instead of Liot Amchavshi Be'aretzeinu. Okay. What else in terms of the Mivta? The Havara. Ashkenazis. Ashkenazis. Of the words. We're going to explore that right now. Now, I know probably a lot of you have heard this because it's pretty famous, but I'd like you to listen to it again. It's relatively short. This was, it'll be self-explanatory, but this was recorded a few days after the liberation of Bergen-Belsen. And listen to the words again and to what the announcer says. Now, part of the reason I'm showing you this is that even though Hatikva was not adopted, the truth of the matter is, even in the World Zionist Congress, it wasn't officially adopted till the 30s, okay? And not as a state till, we said, 2004. But it clearly was the anthem in the hearts of the Jews and a statement of hope. So just we'll listen to
7 years ago today, a remarkable recording was made in the German concentration camp of Bergen-Belsen. The recording became part of a radio report on the liberation of that death camp that was filed by Patrick Gordon Walker, who worked for the BBC.
This is London calling. The day I reached Belsen concentration camp, the fifth day of liberation, was a Friday, the day before the Jewish Sabbath. Something like half the surviving prisoners at Belsen were Jews, and the Jewish chaplain for the British Second Army, the Reverend L.H. Kaplan, held an eve of the Sabbath service in the open air in the midst of the camp. It was the first Jewish service that many of the men and women present had taken part in for 6 years, and probably the first Jewish service held on German soil in absolute security without fear for a decade. Around us lay the corpses that there had not been time to clear away even after 5 days. 40,000 or more had been cleared, but there was still 100,000 left. People were still lying down and planning more daylight in front of our lives. This was the backdrop to this open air Jewish service. During the service, a few hundred people gathered together were sobbing openly with joy and deliberation. With sorrow, the memory of their parents and brothers and sisters that had been taken from them and gassed and burned. These people knew they were being recorded. They wanted the world to hear their voice. They made a tremendous effort, which was quite important.
Thank you.
So I always get a little choked up with that particular version, obviously. Again, you hear a different version of Hatikva. You'll also notice that there are people in the audience who are singing what appears to be different versions. And part of the reason that may be is because the author of Hatikva actually wrote slightly different versions. He changed things up. Not only did he write a version of Hatikva, but as he traveled from place to place, he used to recite his poetry, and he often made slight changes, and it's possible that some of the communities knew it in a little bit of a different nusach. So who wrote Hatikva? Anyone know?
Tully Hertz Gimbel.
Correct.
An itinerant drunk who went from Danville.
That is correct. So our wonderful author of Hatikva, which we now think of almost as a prayer, was actually exactly as she says, was a brilliant poet, a genius. In his young years, before he ran away from home basically to sail the seven seas, he was known as an Ilui. He grew up religious in Galicia, and he travels. He becomes a bit of a womanizer. He continues to write poetry. You'll note, if you think about the words to Hatikva, that the poetry that he writes in Hebrew is not modern Hebrew. Remember, Hatikva is written in 1878. All right? Ben Yehuda was only, 19 or something like that. He hadn't even begun to create modern Hebrew, you know? So you will see in the words themselves that it's old, it's biblical Hebrew. But clearly this is someone who, although he left observant Judaism, he clearly was someone who was learned, who clearly stood up for the Jews, even if he didn't stand up for Judaism. So what happened? So he's traveling around. He writes in 1878 a poem called Tikvatenu, which eventually over time becomes 9 stanzas long. It is possible he wrote it because Petach Tikva, which was one of the first settlements of the first Aliyah period, was established. So it was called Tikvatenu. He comes to Israel in 1882 with a gentleman who is a Christian messianist, a Christian messianist, not a Jew, but has Imber serve as his secretary. So Imber, who meets this man in Turkey and begins working with him, when this man, Lord Oliphant, moves to Palestine, that's when Imber goes to Palestine and joins him. This is the beginning of the period of the first Aliyah. And Imber stays in Israel from 1882 to 1887. And what does he do? As these various kibbutzim develop, not religious ones, he begins to go and read his poetry, usually in a drunken state, and it's beautiful poetry. And he becomes very, very beloved, and they adopt this more and more as their unofficial anthem. But again, with slightly different languages. Ultimately, Imber dies not in Israel. He goes from Eretz Israel to London, ultimately ending up in New York, where he was an alcoholic. And as much as the Jewish community tried to help him, he was not to be helped. Died in 1909 as a pauper, in a public hospital in New York, and was buried originally in New York, and then eventually moved in the 1950s. They moved his bones to Eretz Yisrael after the state was established. So let's take a look. Any questions or no? Okay. Let's take a look at the words to the poem. If I could just ask you to pass them around. We're on this side with just the one poem. Now you'll notice already here that what I have up on the screen is slightly different than what you see on your sheet. And the reason for that is, again, there were slightly different versions as he adjusted things, as he traveled from place to place. So the first thing that one notices is, and this is the first six stanzas of the nine stanzas, the first thing you notice is that when we sing Hatikva today, we begin with the second stanza, not the first stanza. Okay? He begins, Od lo avda tikvatenu hatikva hanoshana. A good biblical word. Okay? The ancient hope. Lashuv, it's probably a typo there. Lashuv le'eretz avotenu le'ir ba David chana. To go back to the land of our forefathers, the city where David dwelt. First of all, where is that first phrase from? Odlo avda tikvatenu. I mean, we call it hatikva. Where is the phrase odlo avda tikvatenu from? Okay, well, let's take a look. I wasn't going to go this way, but let's take a look. Someone want to read that for me? A little too far for you? The hand of the Lord came upon me. He took me out by the Spirit of the Lord and set me down in the valley. It was full of bones. He led me around them. There were very many of them spread throughout. They were dry. He said, O mortal, can these bones live again? O Lord God, only you know. He said, prophesy over these bones and say to them, O dry bones, hear the word of the Lord. Etc., 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 etc. I think you know the story. Let's look at the punchline. And I prophesied as he commanded me. The breath entered them, and they came to life, stood on their feet a vast multitude. And he said to me, O mortal, these bones are the whole house of Israel. They say our bones are dried up. Our hope is gone. Vayomer Eli ben Adam, ha'atzamot ha'el kol beit Yisrael heima, hinei omrim yavshu atzmoteinu, Ve'avda tikvatenu. We're done as a Jewish people. Right? This is the prophecy. Now, eventually the message is one of hope. Right? These bones hopefully are going to come back alive. But right now they are just totally depressed. Avda tikvatenu. Our hope is absolutely lost. Inber takes that phrase from Yechezkel, flips it on its head. Not avda tikvatenu, od lo avda tikvatenu. We have not lost our hope. Okay? So let's just go back. All right. So, od lo avda tikvatenu, ha tikva hanoshana, lashuv el eretz avotenu le'ir bat David chana. Let's go to the second one, what we know as the beginning. Kol od v'levavo. Probably on yours, it says Belevav. Nefesh Yehudi Homia, Ulefate Mizrach Kadima, Eino, yours probably says Ayin Letzion Sophia. Okay, what phrases, let's just take the first two paragraphs, okay? So the first two paragraphs, we'll start here. Kolo Belevav. Nima nefesh Yehuda homi ufate mizra kadima ayin letzion sofia. Any changes from that to the current hatikva, more or less? Basically the same. Now, hard on top. Olo avda tikvateinu hatikva. Bachnot Apayim. How many of you learned Hatikva instead of saying Bat Shnot Alpayim? Hatikva Shnot Alpayim. You know why they say Bat Shnot Alpayim? Because in 2004, that was adopted as the official language of Hatikva by the government of Israel. Because the correct grammar in modern Hebrew is Bat Shnot Alpayim. I learned it as Ha'atikva Shnot Alpayim. Okay? So, no Shana, old biblical Hebrew, no good, modern Hebrew. Ha'atikva Bat Shnot Alpayim. La Shuv Le'eretz Avoteinu. What's the words now? Liotam Chofshi Be'artzeinu. Not to go back to the land of our forefathers. This is not about Abraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah. It is about our connection with the land, Be'artzeinu. But it's about Liot Am Chofshi, that we as people, Lo Avda Tikvateinu, this is about us. We have not. Oh, Lo Avda Tikvateinu. We haven't lost our hope. As long as a human being is alive who thinks about our sense of freedom, we will eventually get back there. It's about people. We want to be free. Le'ir Ba David Chana, which is today, Eretz, Zion, Yerushalayim. Why would they change it? The modern state, why would you change it? What's wrong with, why might a secularist not want to refer to Jerusalem as Ir Ba David Chana?
It's about Kuds.
Huh?
It's about Kuds, the Arabs, no?
Close. David. Who's going to come from David?
Mashiach.
Too messianic. Ir Ba David Chana. It's not about David. It's Eretz Tzion, Yerushalayim. Now that's also an expansion of Tzion. Tzion can mean all of Eretz Israel. Tzion can mean Yerushalayim. Whatever it is. Plus, my guess is, it was also a statement specifically they wanted to not just say Le'ir David Chana. They wanted to say Yerushalayim to make clear what we all know, which is Yerushalayim is the heart. When the heart doesn't beat, there's no body. Okay, excellent. So there are a lot of biblical allusions in the rest of the paragraphs. We'll read through them very, very quickly because our time is short. Okay, so we saw, the first thing we saw is we saw the changes and we saw that they flip these around. Okay, as long as tear flows from our eyes, flow like benevolent rain, you can read it yourselves. As long as our precious wall, it's not anti-religious. A lot of these are imagery that is clearly based in tradition. As long as the waters of Jordan in fullness swell its bank, and down to the Sea of Galilee with tumultuous noise fall, etc., etc., etc. And the last three paragraphs, as long as pure tour, right? So what's it all about? It's all about people. There's always a bit of hope as long as the last Jew is alive to care. Right? There's always hope as long as the last Jew is alive to care. Now, what I want you to think about it as I go through the next part. I want you to think about what a man like Rav Kook might think is missing, such that when Rav Kook is stuck during World War I in London, he writes a response to Hatikva. Now, he wasn't against people singing Hatikva, but he wrote an alternate anthem that he hoped would become the anthem because it reflected his own views. That's the direction we're going, but in the meantime, I'll go quickly through a couple of other things. The tune to HaTikva came to be about 10 years after the poem was written. The music was put in by a man named Shmuel Cohn, and it is very unclear where it really comes from. Those who would like to believe in the glory of HaTikva says that it comes from a symphony, just like Naftali Imber wasn't a drunk, but he was a drunk. Those who are more practical say it comes from a little folk song. So if you believe that it comes from an Italian background, you'll be able to hear HaTikva in this. Wait. Ah. Hear it? Okay, so that's very old, 1645, that's very old. Now, this is a little bit later from Moldavia, and you don't hear it right away until somewhere around here. Ah, HaTikva, our glorious HaTikva comes from the symphonies. All right, now, the truth of the matter is Shmuel Cohn was a very simple guy who came from Romania and probably just heard on the streets as a boy a very simple folk song, which is about horses making clip-clop with their hooves. So, if I had to say which one sounds the most, so that one sounds pretty much like it. Okay, Ralph Cook. What problem would Ralph Cook have with all this?
No God.
Yeah. There's no God. The Megillah does it, but it has Esther. And Esther's name means hidden. And God is hidden in HaTikva too. But for Rav Cook, it's not about tikva. It's not about hope that the Jew, there'll be a Jew alive who's going to care. We know there's going to be a Jew alive who cares. Why? Because the Torah tells us that. The Mesorah tells us that. That's what faith means. We know that it's going to be. That's our faith. It's not about if, as long as a heart continues to beat. We know it's going to be. So Rav Cook writes in 1917, before he comes back to Eretz Israel, he writes his own version. The pieces that he's comfortable with for HaTikva, he leaves. The pieces that he's a little less comfortable with, he changes. And you'll see in 1 second how he changes them. Okay? Take a look. We'll do it in the English for the sake of time. If you turn it over, you'll see it there too. Forever will live in our hearts the trusted faith. La'ad chaya bilvavenu ha'emuna hane'emana. Lashuv el eretz kodshenu. Our holy land. Le'ir bat David Chana. He leaves it the way it was meant to be, originally. Shama na'avod l'dor aleinu. There we will work for our, not our bread, our destiny. It's not a matter of will it happen, it won't happen. But why does he have to work for it? Because that's what we call hishtadlut. Or in Chicago, hishtadlus. A little hishtadlus. Now the beauty of this poetry, shama na'avod l'gor aleinu. Avodah has two meanings. Number one, it's hishtadlut. We may have to actually roll up our sleeves and plant. But na'avod also means to pray, to worship. We're going to pray and it's going to happen. Shamanamot Goralenu Ad Hamon Kada. Our Goralenu, which is part of the Brit, that Ad Hamon Kana is Abraham. Right? He's the Ad Hamon Goyim. Shama Nichya Chayenu Chayeyadat Bimana. Shama Navod Elokeinu. Again, the same verb. There we will worship our God, Bechedva, Begila, Berina, happiness. Shama Na'alel Regalenu. We'll be able to go back up to Yerushalayim three times a year. Torah Chaya Chayim Chendateinu. That's our delight. The Torah, the living Torah. Mipi Elyon Nitna. Given from the One Almighty. Netzach hinachlatenu, forever is our inheritance. It's not about hope. It's faith. It's ours. That's the plan. Mimi bar matana, from the desert it was given. Right? Torah. Now, this is from Rav Jerry because I had never heard it sung. We get the idea.
Now,
so,
Saladin sings this every, I don't know if they do it now, but in the 80s, they sung it every once
in
a
while. In Merikas?
No, in Shalavim.
In Shalavim, yeah, really? Okay. Very nice, very nice. So, if we take a look at the two, I think we come to the conclusions that we've already talked about, and with this, we're already heading towards the end of the evening. Okay?
This should be the anthem of
Mizrah. What? So next time we start with Avinu Shebashamayim and we end with Kola Baleva Panima, as long as the heart's still beating. No. La'ad Chayabil Vavenu. See, when you see them right across from each other, it helps. Nefesh Yehuda Homia Ha'emuna Ha'ne'emana. Lafate Mizrach Kadima. Fate, by the way, is like peya, like a corner. But again, it's a biblical allusion. Lashuvel Eretz Kodshenu Irba David Chana Ayin Letzion Sophia. Odo Abdatik Vateinu. Okay. Shamana Avodu Goralenu Avhamon Chana.
And he's basing his on the original,
correct,
not on the original text.
Correct.
Which is
really very typical for Rav Kook. So we have to remember that Rav Kook, in the early years, so he took a trip, literally up in a wagon, through the various, it's called Masaha Moshavot, not Moshavim, Moshavot. They said at that time, that was the plural, I guess. I guess Moshava, camps Moshava is Moshavot? I don't know. Anyway, visiting all these kibbutzim, and they said, we don't want to listen to you, you're trying to change us, we're not going to change. He goes, I want to see people who are so dedicated to this land that they're rolling up their sleeves and making it fertile and allowing things to grow. That's why we're taking this trip. So Rav Kook was very much into recognizing the holiness in the behavior of or the actions of mostly secular Jews. Not totally. The early Aliyot were religious Jews, but the majority that came in those first Aliyot who were secular, recognizing the holiness which they themselves may not have recognized, but not looking at them demeaning from above, I know what you don't know. But in his mind or in his writings or in what he told to his Talmidim, it's clear. But he felt they were involved in the fulfillment ultimately of a prophecy. So I think that is the end. And with the following words, I will conclude. So the first World Zionist Congress, they tried to do a contest to choose what would be the national anthem. Some people said Hatikva. Some people said Shir HaMalot, which we say before we bench, which seems like a very logical choice. As a matter of fact, it fits very well with the tune as well. But it happened naturally. It just happened organically and naturally, and it was in the Kishkas and what it did for those Jews in Bergen-Belsen. And also, the Brits forbade the singing of Hatikva. I don't know if you're aware of that. On the Jewish-Hebrew airwaves. And then the Jews, of course, they're very smart, so they played the symphony. So they said that no one by Smetin, you couldn't play him at all. You couldn't play him at all. So what did they do? You recall, you've been to Akko, right? So at the prison, as those men were being hung, they sang Hatikva. Because it is deep, deep down in the Kishka. So we're beginning now Lag BaOmer. So Lag BaOmer is looked at both as, it's a break in a tragedy. We look at it as Rabbi Akiva's students weren't behaving with kavod one towards another and were struck down. Lag BaOmer was a break. And that's a reason to celebrate, but not a full-fledged reason to celebrate, perhaps, just to be thankful. So the Chidah offers a little bit of a different explanation. That's when Rabbi Akiva was on that day that he offered his smicha to his five primary Talmidim. And that's a message of continuity. And ultimately, I think that's part of that continuity, that faith to go forward is part of the reason why Hatikva became so popular. And I think, we keep Hatikva in our hearts because of what it's meant to so many Jews over these years. And Ha'emuna of Rav Kook, we also have to keep in mind because we have to also ultimately remember that our values are deeply entrenched in what Rav Kook was putting forth when he wrote this alternative anthem. So thank you very much for your attention. I appreciate it. Yeah.